मुनयात साधु पृष्टोहम भवदीय लोकमंगलम यत्कृता कृष्ण संप्रश्नो येनात्मा सुप्रसीदति. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. This evening we are reading from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2. Here we find the sages, great saintly persons, who are by nature concerned for the welfare of others. What is the difference between a saintly person and an ordinary human being? Simply, a saintly person, because God's love is shining through that person's heart, his life is simply meant for the benefit of others. An ordinary human being is simply conscious in terms of I and mine. I am this body. And those things in relationship to this body are mine. And we are working very hard, and we are making so many arrangements in our life to try to somehow improve the prosperity and the happiness of me and mine. But one who has been touched by the true mercy of God, such a person becomes compassionate. Such a person becomes selfless. Such a sadhu simply lives for the benefit of others and is willing to take all risks and even make great sacrifices, even perhaps die, if in his great sacrifice there will be welfare and service given to other living beings. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we read of one such saintly person. His name was Vasudev Dutt. He pleased the Lord, and the Lord, giving him his divine darshan, asked that I will give you any blessing, any benediction you desire. And do you know what he asked? He said, I cannot tolerate seeing people suffering. It brings too much grief to my heart. And in this world, everyone inevitably has to suffer. Even those who are under the illusion that they are very happy. How long will it last? A few days, perhaps a few years. But whatever arrangements we make when old age, disease, and death come, there's simply sorrow. And yet people are under the illusion that they can be happy in this world. And they are suffering. They are suffering due to their own physical and mental conditions of life. They are suffering due to natural disturbances, and they are suffering due to other living beings cheating them, being cruel to them. Therefore, my Lord, if you offer me a benediction, this is what I desire. Let everyone within this universe go back to Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. Let them all be liberated. And the question may be, what to do with all the karma, the collected karma of all the living beings in the universe? Let me take all of it. Please allow me to go to hell, to Naraka Loka, to suffer the sins of all living beings for the rest of eternity. And let me have the joy of knowing that everyone else is with you, enjoying eternal life, full of bliss and full of knowledge. When the Lord heard this request, he began to cry. Tears were flowing from his lotus eyes to see the love and the compassion of his devotee. The Lord said, "My dear Vasudeva, your compassion is so great that simply by your desire they will all get liberated. I cannot tolerate even the thought of you suffering." Kapila Dev explains in the Bhagavatam that Tatikshava Karunaka Suhrada Saravadehinam Achata Satrava Santa Sadhava Sadhu Bhushanam. He gives the definition of sadhu. Kapila Dev is an avatar of Sri Narayan. What he speaks is absolute truth. He does not say sadhu is someone who shaves his head or someone who wears saffron clothes. Nor does he explain that a sadhu is one who has long, log, matted hair, or that he walks naked, or that he begs from door to door. He explains what are the qualities that decorate a true sadhu. He is tolerant. He is humble. He is compassionate and loving toward all living beings. He is the friend of everyone. He is equal in all situations of life. He is self-controlled. These are the decorations. And he is always engaged in serving God. And he is always spreading love of God. So many of such great sadhus, they came together in the holy forest of Naimasharanya. This is a very holy place, and this took place just after Krishna left the planet. They saw that the influences of Kali Yuga were becoming very rampant within human society. And they were performing together a great sacrifice to somehow or other bring about religious principles, prosperity, and purity of heart within the human society. But things were getting so bad, and the sacrifice was so difficult to perform. They were having great difficulty. At that time, Suta Goswami, the son of Romaharshan Suta, entered into the scene. And they all, with folded palms, greeted him. They knew that Suta Goswami had heard the absolute truth of Sanatana Dharma from the very lips of Shukadeva Goswami. You know the story. Maharaj Parikshit was the king of the earth. And he was ruling the earth purely according to religious principles. He was a Raja Rishi. He was an example of how one can fulfill all of his worldly responsibilities in complete devotion to God, with a completely pure heart and mind. We may be businessmen, or we may be lawyers or doctors, we may be farmers, we may be students, we may be housewives, and we may think, how is it possible for me to be God-conscious in my occupation? But Maharaj Parikshit was a king. He was a politician. And he was also a mighty warrior. But from his very childhood, he was trained to love Krishna. In fact, from his very existence in the womb of his mother, he became a devotee of Krishna. Maharaj Parikshit's mother was Uttara. She was the beloved wife of Abhimanyu, who was the son of Arjuna and Subhadra. You know the story during the battle of Kurukshetra in the Mahabharata. Abhimanyu was mercilessly killed in all unfair ways on the battlefield. Uttara was a widow. But unfortunately, not only was she a widow, but she was carrying the child of her departed husband within her womb. And you know how much a mother loves her own child. Ashwatthama, who was the son of Drona, was extremely angry and seeking revenge for the death of his father. He wanted to annihilate the entire race of the Pandavas. He already had killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi after the battle. There was no other descendant of the five Pandavas except the child in the womb of Uttara. In those days, warriors were extremely powerful, and they had very, very scientific understanding of martial arts. Today, battles are very gross. We are thinking we are very developed because we could make these nuclear bombs. Just like when the American Air Force bombed Hiroshima in Japan, 99.9% of the people that were killed were not warriors or heroes on the battlefield. They were just innocent men, women, children, just minding their own business, they didn't care who wins the war so much. They were just trying to survive like everyone else. Because these big, big bombs, although they're so powerful, they have no discrimination. They just kill and destroy everything. But Ashwatthama, he knew the art through mantra, to create through sound vibration a weapon called the Brahmastra, which was so powerful, it was millions of times more powerful than our greatest hydrogen and nuclear bombs, but it was so accurate that it would only touch the person you wanted to touch. He could kill the child in a womb without harming the mother with this nuclear bomb. That was the precision art of martial arts in those days. It was taught to him by his own father, Dronacharya. So he was thinking that misery breeds company. If I'm suffering, everyone must suffer. If I am without my father, let the Pandavas be without any relatives whatsoever. So he threw that Brahmastra, and Uttara, the mother, she was helpless. The simple, helpless, young, she was only in her teenage years. Her husband, Abhimanyu, was only 16 when he was killed on the battlefield. So she was less than that. What is your age? 16. She was a little girl like this.
And this deadly, terrible, brilliant weapon that it explains was more brilliant than the sun was coming to kill her child. What power did she have to defend herself? But because of her association with great devotees, the Pandavas, she knew that the only shelter is in Krishna. So she simply cried out, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda." At that time, Krishna appeared. He incarnated within the womb of Uttara. Of course, for this it is not difficult for Krishna, because Krishna is everywhere and in everything. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishtom atasmiti rajnanam apohanam cha vedaischa sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. Krishna says, I'm in everyone's heart. He's also in and between every atom through his divine energy. But he personally appeared, and the little embryo in the womb had the opportunity and the fortune to behold the beautiful darshan of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. And this baby saw this terrible weapon coming at it, and it saw that death was imminent. And then there was Krishna standing with his Sudarshan chakra, and with that chakra, he neutralized, destroyed the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama, and saved the child's life. Vivo. And then Krishna disappeared. So when Parikshit Maharaj came out of the womb, he was always looking for that beautiful form, that friend, that lover that saved him, that gave him shelter. And that is why they named him Parikshit. Parikshit means one who is always searching and observing, because he was always looking for his beloved friend, Krishna. And from his very childhood, he would love to worship the deity of Krishna. Everything he did was simply to repay Krishna for his mercy. Some people think that, let me start my spiritual life when I'm very old. But this is not the philosophy of Sanatana Dharma. According to the true culture of India, the Vedic culture, your spiritual development is supposed to begin at the time of conception. The Garbhadhan Samskara means that the mother and the father are purely Krishna conscious, perform yajna, chant the holy names of the Lord incessantly before they even conceive. That way there's a spiritual atmosphere at the very beginning of the child's residence within the womb. And the vibration, when the mother takes prasad, the child becomes purified. When the mother sits in the satsang or the kirtan, that vibration is purifying that child. And when the child is born, to have a beautiful spiritual atmosphere all around. I remember our own Guru Maharaj, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He used to tell us that his father, Sri Gaura Mohan Day, he would not eat at night until first inviting 5 sadhus to the house and feeding them. And he would have his little son, Abhay, that was his name, help serve the sadhus. Nice prasad. And when they ate to their full satisfaction, then they were all very happy. When you're satisfied, then you want to give all nice blessings. So Abhay would say to the sadhus every night, my humble request to you, please give him the blessing
that he will be a devotee of Sri Radharani and she will always be merciful to him. And they would all give their blessings. And then they would take prasad. Guru Maharaj said he cannot remember a single evening in his whole childhood where they were not serving sadhus and receiving their blessings. And he used to see his father worshipping the deity of Radha Govinda in the temple. And children like to imitate their parents. Just like in America, I don't know, India maybe also, all little girls have little toy kitchen sets. Huh? Because they see their mothers cooking all the time. So they want to be like their mother. So they buy little plastic pots and a little cardboard stove and they're cooking all different things. Huh? And they're very happy. I'm like my mother. And also in America, I remember if the father smokes cigarettes or cigars, then the child can't even smoke it, but just puts it in the mouth and looks in the mirror and thinks, ah, I am like my father. Whatever a parent does, the child imitates. If you do good things, they become good. If you do bad things, they will be bad. They don't hear as much as they see. They experience, they feel. So Guru Maharaj, his father, because he was always chanting God's names and worshipping the deity, little up high when he was a tiny little child, he would just have his little deities. He had little Jagannath deities. And when he was 4 or 5 years old, he used to make a little cart and have ratayatras and invite the whole neighborhood, come, have darshan of Jagannath. And he would go to the people that we used to cook kichoris, and he used to say, on the roadside, he had no money. He would say, please give me some kichoris for Thakurji, my Krishna. And he would have his little vest filled with kichoris, and he would bring them all back and say, Krishna, please take my kichoris. Little child. In this way, Maharaj Parikshit also, he had that good fortune. And therefore, because of that pure basis in his life, his devotion was always very strong. He made it a priority in his life to chant the holy name of God, to give in charity to Brahmins and sadhus, to associate and hear from them. And then he was installed as king, and he was a perfect king. He was fair to everyone. He was willing to fight and give his life even for even the most insignificant creature of his kingdom. And while he was king, the influence of Kali Yuga could not enter even for a moment. There is the story that one time Maharaj Parikshit, he used to personally, on his own chariot with his horses, he would go throughout the entire kingdom just to make sure everyone was happy. When I was in Delhi just recently, I was told that one day a week, the Prime Minister meets people in some personal audience. Huh? Can you imagine if the Prime Minister of India or the President of the United States or the President of any country in the world said, anyone who has any problems, just come to me personally and I will solve your problem. The whole country would be standing in line. Millions and millions and millions of people. What would he do? Huh? But Maharaj Parikshit was such a king that he opened his palace doors that anyone at any time could come if they had a problem. And you know something? No one ever came because there were no problems. Because he knew the art. If you water the root of the tree, the entire tree is healthy. Aham saravasya prabhavo matta saravam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvata. Krishna says, I am the root, I am the cause, I am the source of everything. If you satisfy me,
the entire world, the entire society, your life will be perfect. So Maharaj Parikshit understood this science, and he trained everyone by his words and by his example how to make Krishna first. He taught the congregational chanting of the holy name. He taught the virtues of a pure life, of a life devoted to God. And therefore everyone was living in harmony together. This is historically a fact. If the blind lead the blind, they both fall in the ditch. But if the leader has good spiritual vision, the whole world will follow. But one day, something very unusual took place. While he was traveling, just going to see if anyone had any problem, he saw a very wicked and cruel man beating the cow and the bull with a stick. Because the cow and the bull is the emblem of religiosity. And when Maharaj Parikshit saw this, he became very angry. And he drew his sharpened sword and was ready to kill this wicked villain, who was none other than Kali personified. The personality of Kali Yuga, who entered by trying to kill an innocent cow. And Maharaj Parikshit, Kali understood that he was helpless before such a God-conscious man, and he surrendered at the feet of Parikshit Maharaj. And he prayed that I am also your citizen. You must also give me a place and protect me. I'm surrendered to you. I am by nature wicked and cruel. You have to give me a place in your kingdom too. Parikshit Maharaj, he said, yes, I will give you. You can be the ruler of the lives of anyone who is residing in four different places. You are in control wherever there is illicit sex, wherever there is the taking of intoxications, wherever there is gambling, and wherever there is the slaughter of innocent animals or the eating of meat. Those places are your abode where you can cause havoc and suffering to those people. Kali said, Parikshit Maharaj, you are such a king that those things cannot exist in your kingdom. So still I have no place. He said, all right, I'll give you one other place. Wherever people are selfishly hoarding wealth for their own sense gratification. But even that did not exist. When Parikshit Maharaj was king, even the wealthy people were so charitable and so compassionate and so God-conscious. So it is explained that once Maharaj Parikshit was on a hunting excursion, and he was in the forest, and he became very, very thirsty, terribly thirsty. So he saw a little cottage, which was the hermitage of a great Brahmin named Swami Grishi. And he went in and asked, my dear Brahmin, please give me some water, I am very thirsty. But Swami Grishi was immersed in samadhi. He was not conscious of the external world. Ah, so he could not answer. Maharaj Parikshit became very angry. And as he left that place, he was thinking that this Brahmin, he is so proud of being of such a high caste that he's not willing to show respect to me because I'm of a lower caste.
This is not the quality of a real Brahman. A real Brahman is humble, servant of every living entity. A real Brahman does not think himself better than anyone. Brahman is not by birth. Brahman is by quality. This man is a hypocrite. Therefore, he picked up a dead snake and placed it on that Brahman's shoulder and left. The son of that Brahman, who was just a young boy, who had great Brahminical powers, but was very immature and inexperienced, heard about this and cursed King Parikshit to die in 7 days. And when the Brahman heard about this, he became very sad. Such a slight offense of putting a snake on my... He's such a great king. Look at all the good he's doing, and you have cursed him to die? The whole Brahminical class is condemned because of what you have done, my son. When the news came to Maharaj Parikshit, he accepted it as good news. He was joyful. Maharaj Parikshit performed that simple and innocent mistake by the will of the Lord. Because Krishna wanted Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken, he temporarily put Parikshit Maharaj in a state of illusion to commit that offense. Just so, through his devotee, he could liberate the whole world with the teachings of the Bhagavad Purana. Anyways, Maharaj Parikshit, he was very happy. I'm cursed to die in 7 days. This is very good news. Because I'm so absorbed in all of these worldly things of being king and being father and everything else, that I'm not really concentrating properly on the real goal of life. The only goal of life, to become Krishna conscious, to become purified and self-realized. Therefore, in these 7 days, I will utilize every moment to hear about Krishna, to remember Krishna, and to chant his holy names. In the association of saintly persons. Because there is no greater benediction than to be in the company of sadhus. Try to understand what a message is being given to all of us through his life. If you had 7 days to live, you would want to do what you consider the most essential and important thing in all of creation, would you not? If you had 7 days to live, would you play golf? Huh? Or would you play tennis? Or would you watch television? Or would you enroll in college? What would you do? Would you go back to the office? Whatever is the most important thing, that's what you would do. Maharaj Parikshit considered the most important thing in all of creation to be in the association of great devotees of the Lord, to have the satsang of sadhus, of true devotees, of pure devotees. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva sastra koi. Lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. That the association of real sadhus, pure-hearted, compassionate, gentle devotees of the Lord, is so powerful that even one moment's association with such great souls can open the doors to liberation in our life. And Rishabhdev Maharaj, in the Bhagavatam, explains, Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahura Vimokte Stamo Dwaram Yoshita Sangi Sangam. That by serving the great Mahants,
the doors to liberation are open wide in our life. And by associating with people who are too much worldly and attached to sinful things, the doors to the lowest grades of ignorance are opened in our life. This was the most important consideration in all creation that Krishna wanted to show us through Maharaj Pariksit. And that is associating with pure devotees of the Lord and hearing from them and following what they speak. So Maharaj Pariksit left his beautiful palace. He took off his royal clothes and put on the simple garb of a mendicant. He went to the holy river Ganges and he sat down and announced to the world that I am going to sit in the association of saintly persons. I am going to fast from all food and water until death. I will not sleep. I will simply hear and chant the glories of Sri Krishna. Upon hearing this, all the great devotees, all the saints and sadhus and mahatmas from all over the world, they all came to that place. And of all of them, Shukadeva Goswami, Vyaski, the son of Srila Vyasadeva, he appeared. And although he was only a mere 16 years old, he was such a purified, innocent, and simple soul. He had such devotion to the Lord. He had such incredible knowledge. Vishwamitra, Vishishta, Indraprahmad, Gautama Muni, Narada Muni, Vedavyas, they were all there. They gave Shukadev the raised platform of honor. And Maharaj Pariksit was so happy to be in the company of such great devotees. He was explaining that this curse to die in 7 days is such a blessing. To be in the company of all of you is the perfection of my life. If not for this curse, I would be somewhere else. He said, now I am in your company, hearing the glories of the Lord from you. Let that snake bird come and bite me and take my life at this moment. I don't mind. And then he humbly fell at the feet of Shukadev Goswami. And he asked him 3 questions. These 3 questions are considered to be the most important questions in everyone's life. First question was, what is the supreme occupation for all humanity? We all have so much work. We have occupation as father and mother. We have occupation as son or daughter. We have occupation perhaps as a government official or a business person or a sannyasi or a housewife or a student. There are so many occupations in this world. But what is the most essential occupation for every human being? And the second question, there are so many religions in the world and so many scriptures. What is the essence of all of them? What is the common denominator in all religions that is the real goal of life? And the third question, what is the duty of a person that is about to die? We are all about to die. Perhaps today, perhaps tomorrow. But the force of time is taking the life from everyone, slowly
but surely. When we're young, it seems slowly but surely. But as we get older, it seems faster and faster and faster. This whole material creation, from the mightiest Himalayan mountains to the insignificant ant, everyone is perpetually being consumed by the power of time. Everyone's lifespan is being reduced at every moment by Kala Rupa. Krishna says in Gita, I am time. And in this world, I am supreme in the form of time, and everyone surrenders to me at every moment. Whoever we may be, whether we be Alexander the Great or Napoleon, or whether we be Mr. Hitler or any other great conqueror of the world, everyone is conquered by time. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj asked, what is the duty of a man about to die? And in answer to these three questions, Shukadeva Goswami narrated the 18,000 slokas of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of the fortunate souls that happened to be sitting there at that time in rapt attention was Sutta Goswami. He heard submissively from Shukadeva, and he was living according to those teachings. Therefore, when he entered into Naimasharanya and the saints saw him, they knew he has heard directly from the lips of Shukadeva Goswami. He has witnessed that narration between Maharaj Parikshit and the great son of Vedavyas. And in the same spirit as Maharaj Parikshit, these great sages asked those questions to Sutta Goswami. But they didn't ask simply for their own welfare. They asked for the welfare of all other living beings. And after inquiring in so many ways, the first words of Sutta Goswami is this. Munaya sadupristoham bhavad birlokamangalam yatkrita krishna sanprasno yenatma supraseedati. O sages, your questions are perfect. Because your questions relate to Lord Krishna, and therefore they are for the ultimate welfare of the entire world. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Everyone is looking for satisfaction. We want satisfaction of our senses. We want satisfaction of our mind. But no matter how much satisfaction is given to our senses or mind, whatever grand arrangements we make, we're never satisfied. There may be some semblance, some hint of satisfaction for the time being. But like everything in this world, it lasts for a short time, and then again, frustration. We want something else. We want something more. Whatever we have, we need something else. Krishna says that material attachments, material desires are like a raging fire. The more you feed it, the more it burns. The real question is how to give satisfaction, not to the body and mind, which are never satisfied, but to the self. What will bring satisfaction to my Atma, to my soul, to me? You can feed an automobile gasoline and give it great strength. But the driver and the gas of the automobile will not be satisfied, no matter how much petrol put in the car. This body and this mind are like a vehicle that we are living within.
And all the wonderful arrangements we're making for satisfying this body, the senses, and the mind are like giving gasoline. But the soul, the driver, is starving. No amount of wealth, no amount of prestige, no amount of sex, no amount of any. No amount of wealth, no amount of prestige, no amount of sex, no amount of any wonderful gratification will even touch the soul. But here it is explained, the secret to real life, to real pleasure. Sutta Goswami is saying, because you have approached the feet of one who has heard the truth, and you are asking questions about Krishna, the answers to these questions is the only means of truly satisfying your soul. And what is the answer? The entire Srimad Bhagavatam of 18,000 slokas is summarized in one verse. Tasmad Bharata Saravatma Bhagavan Ishvaro Hari Shrotavyas Kirtitavyas Cha Smaratavyas Chetatavayam. The supreme goal of life, the essence of all religions, and the first and foremost duty of a person about to die is to always hear about, chant the glories of, and remember Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This training is true Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma means the eternal nature of the soul. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. Maharaj Parikshit attained the supreme perfection of life in 7 days simply because in those 7 days he completely absorbed his consciousness in hearing the glories of Krishna and chanting those glories and remembering Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, not only explains, but he gives his solemn word, his eternal, immortal promise. Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyajim nam namaskaru mam e vaishyasi satyam te prati jani priyoshi me. He says, Arjuna, because you are so dear to me, I give this promise. And this promise is applicable to all creation, all living beings for all time. That if you always think of me, you become my devotee, you worship me, and you offer your homage and your service to me, you will attain the perfection of life. You will attain me without fail. This is my promise. This is consistent in all the great scriptures. And it's so simple. Lord Kapiladeva, to his mother, Devahuti, explained the most incredibly complicated science of Samkhya philosophy, where he describes technically material nature and time and karma and the soul and the body and all the 24 material elements meticulously. The greatest scientists on earth have never heard anything so analytical. But after describing everything to Devahuti, who is just a Mataji, he's listening carefully, he said, Mataji, all of this knowledge and all the knowledge of all the Vedas are summed up in two instructions. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Just do that. That's the culmination of all knowledge. How to always remember and never forget? It is so simple. Nama sankirtanam yasya sarva papa pranashanam pranamo dukha samanastham namami harim param. Bhagavatam concludes with this verse, that Krishna is none different than his name. By coming in the association of sincere and devoted people and congregationally chanting the holy name in that association, and hearing the glories of the Lord in that association, all sins within the heart are removed, and one attains the perfection of liberation. Kalera dosani de rajan asti heku mahan guna kirtanad eva krishnas mukta sangha param brajait. This age of Kali Yuga that we are living in, just look around. There's so many faults. Here we don't see any faults. It's such a beautiful garden. Everyone is gathered together to simply hear and chant the glories of the Lord. But as soon as you leave this place, what is the situation? So much disease, so much violence, so much dishonesty, so much cheating, so many dangers at every step. And what can anyone do about it? This beautiful statue in the corner, from what I understand, this is Gautam Buddha. Gautama Siddhartha. The statue of this Gautama Siddhartha, who is the son of a great, great king, who is endowed with all wealth and opulence. But when he was a young man, he saw people suffering, birth, old age, disease, and death. And he realized, what is the use of all of this when ultimately old age, disease, and death takes everything away? So even with all of his wealth and riches, he was simply in a lamentable condition of suffering. And through that suffering, he took to the process of self-realization and became Lord Buddha, a great teacher amongst men and an enlightened being. So in this age of Kali Yuga, no matter what arrangements we make, there's so many defects all around us. But there's one benediction. Whoever we are, wherever we live, whatever we have, the supreme wealth is in the name of God. That simply by chanting Krishna's name, we attain the supreme perfection of liberation. We can completely satisfy ourselves. And through the qualities that are developed through the name of God in the association of saintly people, we can live according to our capacity, genuinely, in a spirit of compassion for the benefit of all living beings. And that is true pleasure. That is love. And that is the essence and the goal of all the great teachings, of all the great incarnations. Savai pung samparo dharmo yato bhakti rhokshaje ahoitaki aprati hatha yagatma suprasidati. The supreme occupation is unalloyed devotion to God in whatever we do. To be a father or a mother or a grandmother or a god grandfather in devotion to Krishna. To perform our business activities or to preach as a brahmachari or a sannyasi in that devotion to Krishna. Whatever our field, whatever our propensity, associate with devotees, chant the holy names, live, remember Krishna in devotion, and it will transform every aspect of your life into an offering of love. Thank you very much. So now I would like to invite everyone to chant the name of God, to receive the supreme benediction to all humanity. Lord Chaitanya has prayed, Cheto darpanam marajanam bhava mahad vagni nirvapanam sreyakarava chandrikavataranam vidyavadhu jivanam Anandam buddhi varadanam pratipadam punhamrita svadanam
Sarvatmasna Param Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam.
That the holy name of Krishna is the supreme prime benediction for all humanity. Because it is bestowing upon everyone pure love of God. Anandam Budivaradanam. It is that love that completely satisfies all our longings, all our desires fulfilled.
So we would like to request that in the mood of Lord Chaitanya's chanting of the holy name, we all take part. Everyone, please stand. I would like to share with you the way Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would personally perform the congregational chanting of the name of Krishna. As I am chanting, very submissively and attentively hear the holy name, and with folded palms welcome the name through your ears into your heart, like this. And as you are chanting, offer your life, offer your consciousness on the altar of the holy name by raising your arms like this. And to bring about harmony amongst one another, let us gracefully dance together, first with our right foot,